We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Good vibes, Ben.
Afternoons on the Score.
I'm not begging anybody to pay me. You know, like, that's not where I'm at. You know, I know what I bring to the game. I know what I can do. You know, so again, I'm not begging. You know, I'm not asking. Whatever happens, may happen. So at the end of the day, it's a business. You know, and as you go through this thing a couple of times, you know, you understand that on both sides, on the player side, it's a business. You know, based on them and what they're factoring into their career. And I understand on the other side, it's the same way, you know? So again, I mean, whatever happens with that, you know, happens, but you know, whatever the next chapter is for me, you know, I'm definitely excited and looking forward to it.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show, afternoons on the Score.
Thank you for hanging out. It is Parkins and Spiegel on the Score. We're gonna have David Langle on the show in 20 minutes. He is in Coming to America 2. Coming to America is how the movie is listed with the number 2 in the title. It debuts on Amazon Prime tomorrow, 33 years after the original was a defining comedy of the 80s, and Eddie Murphy, one of the longest gaps between original and sequel in the history of film. I find the project fascinating. We have someone who was a part of it. He's going to tell us stories about it in 20 minutes. But Spiegs, other than quarterback, which is a big, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how is the play? The second biggest storyline of the Bears offseason is what's going to happen with Allen Robinson. I've said for a long time that I think this is ending with the Bears franchise tagging Allen Robinson, him being upset, but ultimately accepting the deal. When Pace spoke the other day, it certainly seemed like he was going to be a Bear one way or the other, but he went on, Allen Robinson did, on Chris Collinsworth's podcast with Pro Football Focus. He's a big fan of PFF, and they are big fans of his. And there's a lot of stuff that we could get into, but let's at least start with the franchise tag. This is Allen Robinson on why he does not want to be tagged by the Bears.
What happens if you get tagged?
That's the tough situation, man, because it's, you know, for myself, I think that I'm, you know, definitely deserving of a long-term deal. You know, not only as a player, you know, but as a person who is involved in the culture. You know, I'm a person who I feel like I've helped build Chicago's culture. And I think wherever, whether it be Chicago or somewhere else, wherever my next stop would be, I think that I would be a contributing factor to that culture. You know, and again, for myself, is, you know, that's a significant value. You know, and when you talk about, you know, a 1-year deal or whatever the case may be, something that you're kind of forced into. As a player, you know, when you're coming off of 3,000 yards in 3 seasons, when you help take a team to the playoffs 2 out of 3 years, you know, it's like you do feel deserving of the long term, no matter where that would be. You know, I think that's what kind of makes the franchise tag so tough. It's not the fact that, I mean, I think I can get a long term deal probably in 31 other teams, you know. Now, depending on how that may look, depending on teams' caps and the players they have and stuff like that. But as a player, that should all kind of be up to your discretion. You know, it's like you can factor things in and say, you know, do I want to take what here? Do I want to do this? Do I want to do that? But the franchise tag really kind of hinders you. And then again, I mean, it puts a lot of stuff back onto the player, you know, especially in my situation where, again, you know, I think that I brought a lot to the game over the past 3 years, you know. So that's a very tough situation, you know. And for myself, you know, I probably would say that's definitely, you know, on the bottom, you know, of my list of choices.
Allen Robinson, yeah, of course, very understandable, and I respect him for talking about it and not letting it be anonymous reporting or leaked sources through his agent and like putting his name on it. But this is a clear example of a guy who just, he doesn't like the rule. Like he doesn't like that the franchise tag exists. But the question that I would ask him is, are you prepared to hold out? Like how anti-franchise tag are you? Or are you just going to be pissed that it happened, but understand that, hey, the rule exists, it's not personal, it's business, take your money, show up and play, ball out, and hopefully get a long-term deal next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what's going to happen because that's the kind of guy he is and that's the kind of power and leverage that the Bears have. They let it get to this point and they'll probably play it out that way. So he's just getting edgier as the days go on and he's trying to make a little bit more noise as the days go on. Yesterday it was the tweet, my GAF meter. Bob from Downers Grove knows what that means. The GAF meter is pinning, or however Allen Robinson said it. He's itching to get his feelings out there, but there's just not a lot. There's not a lot you can do. And when these guys get a chance to speak on something and bristle against it, they sometimes do. And he hasn't done it in an offensive way. Excuse me. He hasn't been offensive as he's done it. He hasn't sounded belligerent or ungrateful or anything like that. In my opinion, he's straddled a fairly difficult line publicly of expressing displeasure, but doing so honorably.
Yeah, and he has the support of his coach and his teammates. Matt Nagy said as much during the year, and his teammates came out with the hashtag, you know, pay A-Rob, extend A-Rob. So, like, if he does hold out, or if he does publicly complain about this, his teammates are going to have his support. That guy's one of the most well-liked and respected players in that locker room. Now, if he misses regular season games, he'd maybe put that in jeopardy a little bit, but we've no indication yet that he's willing to do that. My guess is he's just going to be upset, and he will not be the first professional athlete to be upset, and he will get $16 million fully guaranteed dollars for his efforts if he gets the franchise tag for 1 year. I get it. You'd rather get $35 million guaranteed or $40 million guaranteed like Keenan Allen on a long-term deal. I understand. But my guess is that he's not going to get that this year. So he was then asked what he looks for in free agency, what the factors would be if, in fact, he did become a free agent.
Culture fit, and I would say culture, you know, definitely as far as offense, you know, and then also, you know, when it kind of comes to the team aspect, you know, and again, from being in certain locker rooms, I think cultures with teams are huge, you know, like I mean, and you've been a part of some great cultures, you know, yourself, Richard. So as far as like when you kind of see that, you know, you understand how far, you know, that can take a team. One, then the second would be on the offensive coordinator side. You know, I personally feel like I can fit into 97% of schemes, you know, but definitely being able to be in a scheme where, you know, I'm able to move around, I'm able to have those impactful plays on first down, able to get in the mix on third down. You know, but at the same time, you know, I'm not opposed to, you know, playing with some of the other, you know, adult receivers in the league. You know, I think that's something that, you know, I had a chance to do. I mean, we have some real good young guys in Chicago, you know, but I even think back to when I played with Allen Hurns, you know, and me and him both went for over 1,000 yards, and just kind of the energy that we had to compete to make each other better on a week-in, week-out basis. And, you know, that definitely was exciting too.
That's interesting. At the end, you could hear him catching himself like, hey, we've got good young receivers here. But I've talked to him before about Allen Hurns, and you'd like this speaks. He talked about it like I've heard pitchers in a starting rotation talk about the internal competition of, oh, you went 7, I'm going 7 1/3 the next day. Oh, you had 100, okay, I'm going for 120. Oh, you averaged 14 yards a catch, I'm going to average 15 yards a catch. That they had that competition in Jacksonville with Blake Bortles throwing
with Blake
the ball.
Bortles, and he's had that feeling, and now he's had the feeling that he's had as a Bear, where he's the only target of consequence.
Another hardcore football fans will hear in that. It's interesting to hear him talk about valuing first down throwing percentage. That is something that is becoming a more analytically driven phenomena in football the last 3 to 5 years. Who's willing to flip the script on run, run, pass, and pass on first, get ahead of the chains,
sure,
keep defenses off, maybe get defenses in their sub package on first down, then they can't sub out, then you run on second down when they have an extra defensive back on the field instead of a linebacker. So for a receiver like that, looking for teams that would throw more on first down, just something to keep in mind. But again, I don't think he's going to hit free agency, but that's just, it's an it's an interesting way for playmakers to be looking at teams and valuing teams. And by the way, Russell Wilson would love it if Seattle threw more on first down.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's a sensible indicator to look at. Very, very interesting. Do you see the salary cap numbers that got floated today by Diana Russini in terms of who has money to spend? And it was every team. And it's so interesting because when this stuff comes out, you know, basically everybody's using either over the cap or spot track. Like, we don't have access to the actual numbers, but there are websites that get a little bit more access and they do like meticulous tracking. But isn't that your experience that media folks are all end up using like some of those websites that have ended up defining the very best we can ascertain of very private proprietary numbers?
Well, yeah, and also, again, this year it's weird because the cap is going down for the first time ever, and it hasn't been exactly established yet on what it's going to be. Is it going to be $180 million? Is it going to be $183 million? Like, where is it going to actually come in for the final number? So we don't know that yet. It hasn't been officially reported.
So then how can football reporters tweet out this stuff with confidence and put this stuff out there and just have it taken as gospel by an entire nation of fans, which happens
I didn't see the tweet. My guess is they're doing it off of like one of those sites that is using like projected cap 180, you know? So it has projected it. I haven't seen the tweet, but my guess is it's based on a projected salary cap, not a firm number, but we know approximately what it's going to be. Like, yep. I said, it's going to be a little bit above $180 million.
I just tweeted it right now. So it's Diana Russini, respected NFL reporter, and it's everybody's cap space, everybody who's got room to go, right?
The Bears probably are like, what, $5, $6 million over the cap, something like that?
They've got them at, she's got them at $4.1 million over the cap.
Okay.
And they are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, ninth from the worst situation as of right now against the cap. The New Orleans Saints are $70 million over the cap. $70 million, thanks to Drew Brees's, I might actually play. That might actually be fun to do. The Eagles are $43 million over the cap, thanks to the giant dead cap hit they're taking on Carson Wentz. It's fascinating to look at all of it right now. We know what the Bears' problems are, but there are other teams who are even worse off than the Bears.
And again, cut Jimmy Graham, make Bobby Massey a post June 1 cut, restructure a little bit of Khalil Mack. There's more money to, you know, if you need to get crazy, Akeem Hicks.
It's going to happen.
You could extend Kyle Fuller and reduce his cap hit this year. So I always say we can do this on the radio if you want, but it can get mundane without having the numbers in front of you. And like the NFL salary cap, you can manipulate it. And so like if Deshaun Watson became available, for example, he's only a $15.5 million cap hit this year. It goes up for the next 3 years of the deal. They'll figure that out.
Right. Like, it might include cutting Akeem Hicks even, or, you know, like what would you be willing to do? Because a lot of teams are, you know,
whatever
Golden Tate takes. Gets cut yesterday. Jared Cook, Kyle Van Noy, as you said, there's going to be more and more. Ben Roethlisberger with the forced pay cut and extension today. So there's like, there are lots of weird things that are going to be happening on NFL salaries and payrolls over the next couple weeks as they sort it all out.
And as the more aggressive the Bears are, maybe there's a subsequent move that is going to be even bigger coming back the other way. Let's just get one more clip in here from Allen Robinson ahead of free agency or the franchise tag from the Chris Collinsworth podcast when he talks about quarterback turmoil in Chicago. Then we'll talk Coming to America here in just a couple minutes.
Who is it?
My name's Ray Donovan. I'm looking for Brianna Gathright.
I should notify you at this time you're being recorded. Clearly, this is illegal forced entry.
Brianna?
I don't have to tell him anything, Brianna.
Brianna, could you just come out here so we could talk, please?
Say the word, Brianna, and I'll mace this son of a bitch.
We're the hottest exterminator company in Southern California, but what I'm getting from Conan Associates, it lacks real vision. Your expansion models are lackluster at best. Cutting your fee in half starting right now.
You're doing what?
Unless you want me to walk across the street to your hot ex-wife, who's been calling, by the way. And I got a feeling she'd throw me a bang on top of everything else. No wonder K&A is circling the drain.
Previously on WandaVision.
Could you tell me how often you rotate security patrols? Do you interface directly with local law enforcement? What are your protocols regarding threats such as burglary, graffiti, and reckless driving?
No, Vision.
I know these are indeed grave matters.
New business actually means another round of Danish.
Raspberry or cheese filled?
Oh, neither for me, thank you. I don't eat food.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on the Score.
So excited to talk to our next guest. You can see him on our Twitch chat, by the way, if you log in to Twitch and just search 670 The Score. David Langle with us on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park. Maybe you know him from Ray Donovan or Richard Jewell or WandaVision, which is a huge hit right now. You certainly have seen him in something, but he is listed on the call sheet as a Lyft driver in Coming to America, which debuts tomorrow on Amazon Prime, a project that I've been kind of obsessed with ever since I heard it was happening. David, thank you so much for some time coming on The Score, man. We're really looking forward to it, and happy you're here. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me, Danny and Matt. Great to be here.
Absolutely. So you're from Queens, and you're in Coming to America. That has to just be insane to you, I would imagine.
It is completely insane. I mean, when that movie came out in 1988, we rented the VHS from my local video store. I mean, we played it probably three or four times in the overnight, you know, time that we had it. And I, you know, watching that film back then, I was a young kid. I just thought, oh yeah, it takes place in Queens. That's normal, right? That's where I live. That's what every movie is. It takes place in Queens. I know what they're talking about. But yeah, to actually be in the sequel, I mean, I pinch me. I can't believe. And on the same day as the finale of WandaVision, there's a lot going on.
everything's coming up you. So how does it come about? How does a kid from Queens get cast in Coming to America?
Well, I've been pursuing acting for a while, and I've lived in L.A. since 2004, and I've worked steadily, you know, on films, TV shows, commercials. And in 2019, I got an agent in Atlanta. So there's a lot of show business happening in Atlanta. I don't know if you're aware, but it's like exploded in the last few years. So my representation got me some auditions. You know, I would submit from tapes from L.A. and then I booked a couple of things. And I was filming a Clint Eastwood movie. I was filming Richard Jewell. And the week that I was in town, I got an in-person audition for Coming to America. And I went in and auditioned for the Lyft driver, and I improvised a little bit. I added some neighborhoods in Queens, like, where you want to go? Forest Hills, Jamaica, I'll take you wherever you want to go. And then I booked the part, and I was just in town for the film. I stayed a few extra days because it was my agent's birthday party, and thank God I stayed for that, because I auditioned on the Friday. The party was on Saturday, and then and I filmed it the same week I filmed WandaVision, so it just all worked out. I really don't know how I deserve to be here right now, but here we are.
Well, you've put in your time. I mean, if you've been living in L.A. since 2004 and looking on your IMDb page, the volume of projects that you've done is vast, David. You've done a lot of stuff. You've been putting in your time. Sometimes the breaks come hot and heavy like that, right? Like I know actors who've waited for decades and never got it, but sometimes if it comes, you get two or three at the same time. It's a weird business like that, isn't it?
It's very unpredictable, and when it rains, it pours. And working in Atlanta, it feels like I went through the back door to Hollywood. I mean, I've worked a lot in L.A., but there's kind of a higher tier of projects happening with a different pool of talent. So I kind of finagled my way into these large projects through the back door, and then it kind of came back around through the front door. But, you know, when you're looking from the front, no one knows the difference.
Did Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall have their own space, their own trailers, their own set, their own directors, their own craft services? Like, I mean, like, were you all mixed in together, or were those men fairly isolated? They could do what they want, of course.
Yeah, I was isolated. You know, don't get me wrong. I'm in the movie for a very short amount, and but I'm in the movie. I mean, someone saw it and they saw me, and I don't know if you saw my Twitter, but the director, Craig Brewer, actually tweeted at me that, you know, congrats on the double bill, you know, referring that I'm in WandaVision and Coming to America on the same day. So, I mean, my scene was with Eddie Murphy, and he was doing his own thing, and I showed up. I mean, it was kind of like I was a real Lyft driver to him. It was very real the way we played it.
Okay, so that's what I wanted to know. We're talking to David Langle. He's in, and yes, congratulations on WandaVision. It is a massive, massive hit. But so you are in a scene with Eddie Murphy. I know you will not be able to give away all of the plot points, but, like, what the hell is that like, man? This is one of the biggest legends of the industry.
I mean, it was a day on the set, and luckily, coincidentally, I had gone to a screening of Dolomite a month earlier, and he was there on a panel with the entire cast, with Wesley Snipes and the whole team of that film. And so I saw him in person. I heard him talk, and he told this great story. He was asked a question about being an actor and auditioning, and what his process was been like when he was breaking in. And he said that as an actor, he had only gone in his entire career on one audition. He's only auditioned once in his life for Saturday Night Live. Everything else was an offer. So, I mean, I don't know how much he relates to me as a day player, actor who's grinding for years, you know, audition after audition. So I don't know I love Eddie Murphy. I am honored to be in his presence, to be within, you know, several feet of him, and to be share the screen for a moment. It's a huge thrill, especially representing Queens. I know you guys are a sports station. I'm a huge Mets fan. It goes with the whole Queens Coming to America character. So it all fits in. And the Mets are referenced in this film. Obviously, he wears that jacket, and the jacket is back.
Yeah, so it's Francisco Lindor. Danny, did you see Francisco Lindor sporting the Coming to America jacket the other day at Mets camp?
Good morning, my neighbors.
Yeah. Did you have one of those Mets jackets growing up as a kid?
I didn't have that one. That one is pretty swanky with the leather sleeves. But I have several Mets jackets and paraphernalia and memorabilia. I have seats from Shea Stadium in my apartment right now. I have a Mike Piazza. I have a Mike Piazza poster. I got a DeGrom jersey signed. I got a ton of bobbleheads. I got a lot of Mets stuff. I love them. I did a Mets podcast to recap games for a few months, but I don't know who listened to that. But I did it.
I respect the hell out of it. So this movie, this franchise, this iconic film, right? It's made in 1988. It's arguably the defining movie of Eddie Murphy's career. He obviously has many, you could argue it or whatever, but they're bringing it back 33 years later. It's one of the biggest gaps in movie history, from an original to a sequel. What can you tell us about, like, are you surprised when you hear that that is a thing, or just the undertaking of a project like that? Because I got to be honest with you, as such a huge fan of the movie, I'm a little worried that the sequel's going to, like, I'm going to be comparing it to this original classic, and I just wonder how they balance that in your mind, because I'm assuming you've seen it.
I have not seen the film.
Oh, wow. So, okay.
Well, you know, everything's changed with COVID. You know, there's no premiere, there's no gathering, there's no celebrating, you know. So, but when just hearing that it's the largest gap between an original and a sequel, I mean, that's
one of them, yeah.
33 years is a long time. I mean, it makes you think, 1988, what was I doing in 1988? You know, I mean, that was just like a different existence for all of us. I mean, it was just a different, I mean, pre, you know, internet, you know, pre COVID, obviously. But it's just like, it was just such an innocent time. And I can't believe that they made this film, you know, so many years later. My buddy texted me this morning that he saw it, and he says it's great. And I was like, oh, awesome. So he says it's very well balanced between paying homage to the original and being a its own film.
That's crazy to me that you haven't. So, like, are you just going to be like the rest of us, and you're just going to pull up Amazon Prime tomorrow and watch yourself, and you'll be like, oh, damn, there's me and Eddie Murphy. That's insane.
That's what's going to happen. I mean, look, the whole releasing of films has changed. So it's not like, you know, anything is the norm right now. And I don't know. I don't know, you know, what they did to celebrate. I heard there was some screenings, but I'm along for the ride just like you guys, and it's fine. I mean, like I said, I have a small scene. It's cool that that I'm in the film and that it occurs on the same day as WandaVision. So, look, there's a lot to celebrate for me. I'm very grateful.
If anybody's watching on our Twitch feed, you're seeing David Langle, and it's just a majestic mustache, just remarkable. And clearly well kept for, and well cared for, I should say, and well kept. As a day player, as you put it, once you find a look that seems to work and people like, the temptation would seem to be to just keep it forever. Like, have you thought about, have you had moments of wanting to shave, and now is it off limits to shave the mustache away at this point?
Yeah, I'd love to have a good reason to shave, but until I have that reason, it would be foolish, especially in the last year, because the, you know, the timing for filming WandaVision was kind of split, you know, pre-COVID and post-COVID with a long delay. So during that time, I was like, no, I can't shave. And even at the beginning, when I was still auditioning in person for projects, they would ask me, are you willing to shave? I said, no, I can't shave. You know, and they said, oh, well, you know, they were a little bit surprised because, you know, everyone wants to do what they have to do to get the job. But you know, some people were like, oh, that means you're working on something. And I said, yeah, I'm working on something. What are you working on? I can't say, you know, because I couldn't talk about Marvel stuff beforehand. But yeah, the mustache has served me well. I have not shaved my lips since 2014. I've had it on and off before then. I experimented with beards, you know, sideburns, various incarnations of facial hair, and this one seems to be the most iconic. And then the emoji came out, and it was like, that's me, and it helped my marketing, and I booked more work, and so I just kind of leaned into the mustache.
And the irony is, if it were baseball, your beloved baseball, if you went to the Yankees, they would make you shave. Like, you'd have to shave. Well, if you did that,
they allow mustaches, but you know, it has to be real.
That wouldn't fly. Thurman Munson didn't have a mustache like that. Don Mattingly's was not as thick. I think that's beyond Yankees acceptability, I believe.
Yeah, but Giambi did grow a mustache, remember? Like,
yes.
You can't, I think only neat mustaches. But yeah, it has to be above the lip. I would have to alter it, yes. But I know that they do allow some form of a mustache.
That's the only thing keeping you, David Langle, from pitching for the Yankees.
That's it.
It's the only thing.
Yeah. Well, I gotta stay true to the orange and blue, though. You know.
That's true. Yeah, right. No, that and your mustache and your Mets fandom. Otherwise, you'd be there in pinstripes.
Yeah. Otherwise, sure. Yeah.
So, okay. You're the Lyft driver for Eddie Murphy. You're in Richard Jewell with Clint Eastwood. Like, wait, when's the time in your career when you're in the presence of some A-list of A-list star and you are intimidated? Like, is Eddie Murphy the top of that? Is Eastwood the top of it, or has there been another one?
I also worked with The Rock in 2019. I did a film with Clint Eastwood, Eddie Murphy, and The Rock, plus the Marvel show. So I mean, they all filmed in Atlanta. So that was a crazy year. Was I intimidated? Of course. I mean, it's like, it's like you're watching it outside of yourself. Am I really here right now? Am I standing next to The Rock on this boat? We were doing the Jungle Cruise for Disney based on The Ride. So it was just like, it's like kind of an out of body thing, but there you are and you have to kind of ground yourself so that you can be an actor and perform in the scene. So, you know, you get over it real fast because you're professional and you have a job to do, but it's cool. I mean, I love the WWF in the 90s, the Attitude Era, and The Rock says, know your damn role. So, I mean, he was a big one. That was very exciting. But Eddie Murphy, I mean, I don't know. I'm flabbergasted that I got to work with these icons, really.
Hey, David, can you tell Danny that he's wrong and that Beverly Hills Cop is the defining role of Eddie Murphy's career? Can you just share that from an insider's perspective? Can you agree with that for
me,
please?
I cannot concur with that, especially today.
Especially today. You're asking a guy from Queens ahead of the debut. Yeah.
All right, that's fair.
Yeah. He's not in Beverly Hills Cop 4. He's in Coming to America. Come on.
That's a good point. And for your files, the third longest time between original movie and sequel in the history of Hollywood. Mary Poppins, number one. Blade Runner, number two. And Coming to America is number three. So history for you, David.
That's pretty good. Number three. Okay. Good to know. Thanks, fellas, for that trivia.
You got it.
No problem. Listen, man, congratulations on your huge year and the success. And WandaVision is a cult classic, or I don't even know if it's a cult classic. It's just everybody seems to love that show. And Coming to America is going to be a monster hit. So seriously, man, thank you for the time and congratulations on the big come up.
Well, thank you so much for having me, guys. It's been a real thrill.
Thanks, David.
Yeah, just like working with The Rock, coming on with Parkinson Spiegel in Chicago. I'd say right there. Appreciate it.
The Rock, Clint Eastwood, Eddie. He was on Everybody Hates Chris, a small little role on Everybody Hates Chris way back in the day. So he's worked with Chris Rock and Eddie Murphy in some ways. Pretty cool.
What a wild business. Yeah. Like you grind for nearly two decades and small part, one episode of this.
Dude.
And then because your agent is in Atlanta and there's a sub-hub of Hollywood that kind of grows there.
Uh-huh.
You all of a sudden are doing stuff with Clint Eastwood and The Rock and the Marvel Universe and, oh, yeah, by the way, Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
That's insane, man. Just like the randomness and the subjectivity of these types of businesses.
When we're talking to him, I kept thinking about a friend of mine, Rich Hutchman, who's a guy I did some acting and some stuff with in Chicago. He's been in L.A. for 25 years, maybe? 23 years? And he did like five episodes of Mad Men. He was Pete's brother on Mad Men and a whole bunch of commercials. Like, you'd probably know his face. You've seen him in some commercials. But every time I talked to him, I was like, how you doing, man? Well, you know, that big break could be right around the corner. And it could be, because people live their lives like that. And it might be. It might be right around the corner. He still works and still grinds and makes a life out of it. And every once in a while, you get WandaVision, you know?
It's just, it's totally insane. There's an on this day, you know, I don't love the like back in my day, remember when type of thing, but this is the type of sports anniversary that I'm all about celebrating next on The Score.
Score House is happening.
Both.
That means.
Oh, yeah.
So Score House is happening. I'm excited about this. I love Score House. You just heard the promo. 2 weeks from today, we're going to get the whole band back together on Twitch from 7 to 9, and we're going to just hang out and do a broadcast at night, spring training style. I would say cocktails are mandatory. I haven't talked to anybody about that, but I certainly don't plan to be sober. And so we'll tell stories from Score House past, but also just like interact with the audience on Twitch and each other and get everyone there and have a blast, man. I think that's very cool. 2 weeks from today, the 18th, put it in your calendar, 7 to 9 p.m.
That sounds really cool. So everybody can hang out with all of us and watch on Twitch and we'll tell some stories. And I think there's also like some video that got produced last year at Score House that possibly could be aired and or referenced the wacky relay race thing that we did is one. And there are hours and hours of unaired Score confessionals that I hope have been deleted and lost to posterity, but I fear might still exist.
Dude, I don't know if my eyes were open for any of that 20-minute confessional that I did.
You were higher than a kite.
I have no idea. I can't believe I got in front of a camera. for any of that nonsense.
Shep was hammered. He was absolutely tanked. That was awesome. I think that was my favorite part of the week there.
Do you guys remember the journalist? There were a couple journalists who came by. Really just one. There was one beat writer who came by, and I know he was part of Score Confessionals. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, of course.
Was it Sahadev Sharma? Yeah, Sahadev Sharma somehow ended up on the Score Confessional couch after a couple of glasses of wine. I have no idea what Sahadev might have said.
Well, he went out to dinner with us. He went to the Benihana type place in downtown Scottsdale or something like that, came back, was drinking with us, and then he was just standing up there. I was like, Sahadev, you want to jump in on the confessionals? Yeah, I'll do it. And then he just freaked out and said, you can't let these people do this again.
Oh, that's right. I do remember that. But there's got to be some stuff in there either about Patrick Mooney or John Greenberg that he doesn't want to see the light of day, you know, if we were doing our jobs.
We've got incriminating evidence on all of us, so maybe we can get some of that out there on the Twitch broadcast next, two Thursdays from tonight, so the 18th from 7 to 9 p.m. But I forgot about this, man. This Scorehouse anniversary story from the White Sox clubhouse, because I was off interviewing Tim Anderson, ironically enough. I was doing the one-on-one with Tim Anderson, and you and Mac were just getting as many people as you can, but TA was the guy who I really wanted to talk to, and so I was like, I'm going to just wait for him to be ready, and you guys worked like the whole clubhouse, so I had my back to the whole thing. I didn't see any of this going on, but give a little bit more color here before we get to Aaron Bummer and you and Max conversation here.
Yeah, super fascinating White Sox clubhouse there at Camelback. Abreu and several other, Yermín Mercedes, very vibrant and active. Several other of the Latin guys off on one side. I don't speak Spanish. I didn't approach those guys. Then on the other side, I'm talking to a few guys. Talked to Andrew Vaughn for a minute. Talked to James McCann for a minute. He was clearly sad that Yasmani Grandal was going to come and take his time away. That was the subtext of that. And Mac was just kind of standing behind me a little bit. Remember how he would get weirdly shy at times that you didn't think he would ordinarily be shy? And he would. So I was going up and talking to people, and I'm having a conversation with, should I say who I was having the conversation with at this point?
You're having the conversation with Aaron Bummer, but then Mac joins me. No, is that wrong?
No, it's Danny Mendick. Danny Mendick.
Oh, my bad.
And I had spoken to Danny Mendick one time previously. A likable guy, actually decided to try and train himself as a super utility here, about to make a team. We had all just seen Luis Robert with his shirt off, where everybody was just talking about that. I'm talking to Danny Mendick, and Mac came up and joined the party. Absolutely.
Do you consider yourselves among the favorites in the division?
Absolutely. I mean, us and the Twins are going to be going at it. You know, that's kind of how we look at it.
It's a quantum leap from the record a year ago, and it's crazy.
It's awesome.
One off season just sends everything crazy.
Absolutely.
It's Danny Mendick with Mac and Spiegs. And guys, you think I mock. I support all adult I support all adult Dannys.
You know, you do this long enough, you find the things that you've never done in your life.
Uh-huh.
And that was one of them for me, because as Spiegs already was underway with Danny Mendick when I walked over there, and you were just started with Tim Anderson, and I said, all right, I'll let Fotsy go ahead and take the shortstop, face of the station. Let Fotsy take that. So Spiegs and Hyles.
This guy over here.
I thought Spiegs was talking to Nick Madrigal. I thought I was joining a Nick Madrigal interview in progress.
That's awesome.
And then when he said, well, I'm not a high round pick, and I'm like, who in the hell am I interviewing? I had no idea who he was. No clue that I was doing the two-on-one.
So your questions were just about expectations.
Yes, Captain General's brilliant.
Oh, God.
Are you aware of the expectations for this team in a general sense?
I don't know if I've ever enjoyed a professional athlete who I didn't know who the hell he was while interviewing. He was as nice as the day is long. He made eye contact with us both the entire time. He was terrific. Afterward, we talked about going to college in Boston, and he and Spiegel bonded over that.
Uh-huh.
No idea. I said to Shep, I said, who's Spiegel talking to? Is that Madrigal? And he said, I think so. I said, all right, I'll walk over there. It's in progress already. And then, oh, God, I'm glad I didn't call him Nick.
No, no, that'd be good.
That would have been embarrassing.
You guys should maybe take a look at a roster every once in a while.
That's incredible.
Some pictures, couple. Yeah.
Chef gives him the green light. Yeah, I think so. I think it's magical. Go ahead.
Go talk to him. Go check it out. Yeah, roster maybe. They have numbers on their back sometimes, or numbers on their locker, too. There's all sorts of clues that might be out there. But, you know, it didn't derail him from asking questions. That did not derail the baseball conversation.
No, so that was on this day in Scorehouse history when we were at the White Sox clubhouse. And that's why I know why I kept saying Aaron Bummer. I was getting it confused. This is where my hate of the recorder came back. My PTSD from grade school playing the recorder before the clarinet, before the saxophone. I told that story a couple weeks ago where I ultimately quit music.
Yeah.
The recorder in the background of the Aaron Bummer conversation. You guys had a conversation with Aaron Bummer earlier today. Here's Mac and Spiegs with Aaron Bummer.
Uh-huh. At the end of the day, you got to get the last three outs are the most important outs that you can get. So let's be real. Dude.
Yeah,
first three outs are just as important as the last three outs. Like, it doesn't necessarily make a difference.
That is incredible stuff. That's Mac and Spiegs with Aaron Bummer. was I so enraptured with Tim Anderson that I didn't notice the recorder going on in the background? Who's playing Hot Cross Buns? What the hell's going on here?
I told you that Ricky Renteria had a band set up. And
I saw that.
And after we left, he had people playing a bunch of different instruments. I didn't realize somebody was practicing on the recorder during our entire interview.
Yes, to your right, to the left of our Aaron Bummer. Yes, that was a thing. I enjoyed it. It added ambiance.
Now, I want to know if it's going to be there during my Tim Anderson interview at 5.
Show the black community that it is fun to play baseball. Not too many black guys in the league. You know, numbers are going down.
Recorders, huge in the black community.
That's right. Although the numbers are dwindling, and we need to figure out why there's so few.
I swear to God, I had completely blacked out apparently my entire time in the clubhouse. I didn't hear a single recorder until we were on the air.
Oh, man. I just remember your mean Mercedes grabbing the microphone and getting ready to be the lead singer of Rick Renteria's cross-cultural musical extravaganza that day at Camelback. They were fun, man. They're still
fun. Yes, they were.
And they are still fun.
Yeah.
And Tony La Russa's getting excited about your mean Mercedes, like the rest of us. You see that guy? What is he? It looks like he's 5'7", 260, and runs pretty well, and hits lots of homers, and plays defense interestingly at several different spots. And every time we see him, we get excited. And so far, it's led to a total of one plate appearance in the major leagues? Is that correct?
Yeah, and they were crediting Jerry Nairn with these young guys catching, and they asked Yermin yesterday about Jerry Nairn. He's like, well, he's an old guy, and that's what he can tell you about Jerry Nairn.
Great. That helps.
Jerry Nairn. I want to talk to Jerry Nairn. That's a hit-and-run guest coming. You just wait. Have you seen his lineup cards, Danny? Have you examined?
Yeah, I've heard Bernstein talk about him for 30 minutes.
How does he do it?
To the midday guys, Speaks. Doesn't matter.
Hey, man. No, calligraphy is beautiful. Good for Jerry Nairn.
Bernstein's like, where did he learn to write shalom like that? Where did he learn cursive? Why are the vowels not there? What's the color coding? Is there a graph, a code, a key that would explain this lineup card? I want to know. I'm like, good for you.
Two things. One, I'm now sorry I brought it up. And two, Bernsey took the fun out of calligraphy. He did it. That's his superpower. We all know everybody's got a superpower. Bernsey's is taking the fun out of absolutely anything. Shane, what's your superpower? That was getting discussed as well today.
Yeah, I can identify any dog breed, purebred or mutt. I can tell you what your dog is consisted of. What your dog consists of. Okay.
Fascinating.
Kenny, you're just pissed you don't have any superpowers.
Dick Tanny does have a superpower. It's creating audio gold for radio.
Turning
stations.
My mic off.
That's one of them. I have several. Yeah,
that's a
one
very impressive.
Forcefully
superpower.
Sending it to break on 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.